Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Napalm smells best in the evening. It's not worth believing what you heard. Soylent Green, really just a trisket, not a people biscuit. Take my word.
Hello and welcome to I Was There Too. This is the show where I talk to people who were in great scenes of cinema history. My name is Matt Gorley, and today I don't do it alone. I have a co-host, my wife Amanda Lund. How did this happen? Because I was offered the opportunity to interview Alana Ubach, Serena from Legally Blonde, one of Reese Witherspoon's best friends throughout the film. You know, the one who speaks Vietnamese and gets bangs. That one. And I mentioned that to Amanda, and she said, "You have to do it." And I said, "But I have to admit, I've never seen that film." And she said, "Well, sit down and let's watch it." And also my dad and stepmom were there, so it was a whole family affair. But I'm glad it happened because this was a very fun interview and ultimately a family bonding experience. And speaking of family, there's a whole brand new segment in this interview that I'm very excited about that has to do a little bit with family. So my thanks to Colin Anderson for making this interview happen, to Alana Ubach for being such a great conversationalist, and to Amanda for making this interview all the more fun, and to you for listening. That's all, except to say that I Was There Too will be at the Now Hear This Podcast Festival in New York on September 9th. So if you're in the area or want to travel to the area, go to nowhearthisfest.com and do that. All right, on with the show.
The film, Legally Blonde. The year, 2001. The role, Serena. The actress, Alana Ubach.
Well, first of all, here today on I Was There Too, it's unprecedented. I have my first co-host of all time, and it happens to be my wife. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, Matt. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for doing this with me, because you're a huge fan of this film.
Yes.
And you suggested that I watch it with you. In fact, we ended up watching with my parents as well, so it was really a party.
It was a thrill. It was. No, I was so happy. I know we flip through Netflix a lot almost every night and iTunes movies looking for something to watch. And I know I've always been flabbergasted that you have not seen this movie. So it was really great to have the opportunity to get you to watch it.
And we have our guest today to thank for that. Alana, I want to open up with this question.
Hi.
How are you?
Oh, it's so cute to be with this like husband and wife team this morning.
I think we're one of the rare husband wife podcasting duos.
Are we?
Today, especially.
There's a few, but
there are. But we've worked together on some other podcasts as well. So we're doing our best to blaze this trail.
Well, it's very 1940s.
There was
a show. Wasn't there a show in Britain that was like brunch with such and such? And it was this. I think it was a husband and wife duo. If I'm not mistaken.
If there is, I'm going to watch it. But yeah, I mean, well. You
got the Stiller and Mira, Burns and Allen. And I mean, we flatter ourselves to put us in that category, but we're looking up to them.
All right. You little anachronisms, you. Awesome. I'll take
it. I want to start with how you ended up in this film. I read that basically your friend, Jessica Caulfield, was already cast as Margot.
Yes, and she was.
She was reading with actresses for the part of Serena, and that's when you came in, and maybe she gave you a little bit of a leg up, or how did it work?
Well, here's what happened. Let's rewind. I was in a movie called Pink as the Day She Was Born. It was this little indie that Linda Perry ironically produced.
Four Non Blondes, Linda Perry.
And okay. I said, yeah. And Joseph Middleton, the casting director of Legally Blonde, had seen me in that movie. And he thought, oh, she's kind of wild and wacky and fun. So let me bring her in for the role of Serena in Legally Blonde. I read the script and I thought, well, Reese and I had done Freeway together years back. And I just remember her being diminutive. She's like no bigger than a minute. And I thought, wow, okay.
I love that.
This is the one up I have on everyone else that's going out for this role. I'm short. I'm a dwarf. So if I can go in and prove to them that they have no choice but to hire, you know, someone short to be alongside Reese Witherspoon as her best friend, then I'm in. And so I finally go on tape for the first audition. And then a couple of weeks later, I hear back from Joseph Middleton's office saying, we want you to come in for a chemistry read with Jessica Caulfield. And back then, you know, the internet wasn't really around. It wasn't popular. So I didn't really know who I was about to meet. But I walk into the audition room and there's Jessica Caulfield, who's tiny.
Wait,
and
so
I
you
thought,
didn't know
yes.
her before?
I didn't know her before.
Can you believe the internet is wrong about something?
Oh, yeah. No. Well, then we became great friends after that. But there you go. I know, believe it or not, the internet is incorrect. But I walked in and she and I just locked eyes and I thought, oh my God, she's tiny too. So there's something here. I managed to, you know, when you meet someone and it's the only like real talent that I say I have is when you basically meet someone right off the bat and you're like, oh, okay, they're exceptionally shy people. You know, this girl's really street smart, or this girl's highly educated.
So you have that ability to size someone up.
I can size someone up. It's the only thing I'm good at.
Wait, can we just take a quick break?
Sure.
To your size up impressions of Amanda and me.
Exceptionally smart people.
Oh, come on.
Nice. No.
Well,
you know
a
lot
in your
about
system.
Literature, I'm sure, and art. And you
Is
guys
it the glasses?
Are yes, huge, avid readers. I'm sure if I dropped something, you'd be like, oh, yeah, I know that reference. I mean, yeah.
You may be giving us too much credit.
And maybe you're foodies? I'm assuming foodies?
I think
Amanda I'm not a foodie. I like to cook.
You like to cook. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But you're very interested
cookie.
In foodie. Anyway, okay. Sorry. Continue.
Anyway. And you're great lovers. You're exceptional kissers. And polygamy is... Yeah. No. Anyway, so basically I walk in and I thought, okay, this girl is very, very smart and very down to earth. And I managed to pull her aside. And I was broke at the time. I was like on my last dollar. And I thought, oh my God, I really need this gig. So I pulled her aside and I was just like, listen, I'm broke. And she was like, oh my God, I've been there. I said, listen, can you got to help me out here. How can I book this? And she was just like, okay, I got an idea. Like she thought so quickly off her feet. She was just mirror my movements. Just copy everything that I, you know, any gesticulation that I do, just be like half a second, you know, after me. If you can do that, we'll be like a Laurel and Hardy team.
Yeah.
They can't say no. And that's exactly what we did. And we got hired. I got hired. It was, they cracked up and I thought, oh my God, this worked. And she kind of winked at me and I left the room. And like that day I found out I booked and I was like, oh thank you, Jessica.
Yeah, because great.
They are moving like as a unit almost. Like
sure.
You're double sidekicks of Reese Witherspoon.
Absolutely. Yeah. We're like her consciousness.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, and you guys are so physical too. And like when you do that little cheerleader move, it's like,
oh, yeah.
That just made me laugh so hard because it's also like, what is that?
I have that written here.
It's the famous, you know, from the war. It's the famous.
Oh, Rosie the Riveter.
Thank you very much.
Okay. And then you hold it just like a beat too long and it pushes it into like being so funny.
Yes,
so just I like the length you hold that pose.
I was
like
a bit of a ham.
I have it written here as your prolonged arm flex pose. And it really lingers and it really cracks me up.
Oh, I'm so excited it did. I worked out a lot during that time. I was very, very proud of my glutes and abs and my guns. And hey, you know, if you've got it for 10 minutes, flaunt it in those 10 minutes. Anyway.
But, so yeah, you got the part. And then how long before you start shooting?
Well, we had a table read. And then we started shooting like a couple of weeks after that. Robert Luketic, who was the director, had done this really cool short film called Tiziana Buberini. And
we saw that online.
Last night we were looking.
We didn't watch it, but we saw that.
Yeah. Oh, it's brilliant. It's the coolest thing ever. And I think Mark Platt, who's like the godfather of feel-good films nowadays, he was the producer of Legally Blonde. He checked it out and he was like, who is this guy? And so Robert Luketic was given this gigantic toy to play with. And so he rehearsed with us for a couple of weeks and then we started shooting and that was it. And Risa just had a baby.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think Ava was maybe like a year old at the time. Wow. Yeah. She wasn't really talking. So I'm assuming she's probably like a year when she brought her to the set and stuff like that. Yeah, that was years ago.
Was she pregnant during Legally Blonde 2 when shooting?
Yes. Yeah. We had to hide her behind like giant presents.
Huge, oh my God.
Yeah, huge handbags.
This is pre Wonder Woman days where you can now green screen, put a green screen belly cap on.
My husband was telling me about that last night. That's crazy.
I know.
Coolest thing ever.
I know. I love in like the old TV shows when someone's just like always behind a counter or they're like holding a house plant.
Yeah, a whole season of I Love Lucy was that way. Do you remember?
Oh yeah.
That's so funny.
And yet she had a baby on the show, but they still kind of hid her pregnancy, if I'm not mistaken.
Because
it was like, it was just wasn't done to show that kind of thing on television.
Is that what it was? That's so funny.
I could be wrong.
Oh, no, I think you're right. It was like you were meant to stay inside if you were pregnant. So when you're going to work to film a TV show is not cool.
You have sex. Get the hell off of television.
Yeah. What'd you do? Push those beds together?
Yes.
It's physically impossible.
That's impossible.
I see how they're embedded into those headboards. You can't move those things.
Right.
That's by design. All right. So let's talk about your character. As far as I can tell, you're literally the only brunette in Delta Nu. Your character speaks what I think is fluent Vietnamese. How much talk was there about setting your character of Serena apart from the stereotypical sorority girl?
You know, it was funny when they were still kind of figuring out if I should be hired or not. I remember it was hours of them going back and forth that day of whether they should hire me or not. There was another girl who I was up against who looked like a supermodel. And thank God for Karen McCullough and Kirsten Kiwi Smith, the writers of Legally Blonde. They basically emailed everyone back saying, this is why you have to hire Alana. She's she represents the ridiculous Valley girl in the 818 who goes to USC and is like, you know, she's a little jappy. So the Jewish American princess who thinks she's blonde and acts like she's, you know, the cliche blonde, but isn't. And everyone has basically taken her under their wing to make her feel blonde because that's how she rolls.
You're an adopted blonde.
I was an adopted blonde. Exactly. Yeah. And no one ever told me I wasn't. So I think that was the irony and the funny part of it. Exactly. Yeah. Good times.
How long did it take you to learn that Vietnamese line? Is it Vietnamese?
It was Vietnamese. There were that day. You know, I started getting the sense that Robert Luketic was cool at allowing people to improvise. Mm. So I went up to him during lunchtime and I said, "Hey, are the women who are in the background of this who are playing the manicures? What is their ethnicity? I didn't know, you know, if they were Chinese, if they were Asian." Yeah. He said, "They're Vietnamese," and I was like, "Oh my gosh!" So I went right up to them. They barely spoke English, and I said, "Listen, do you know how to say this in Vietnamese?" And they wrote it down for me, and I really was saying something in Vietnamese, and so I had all of lunch break to memorize that one line. And I said, okay, I've got it. Let's do this. So let's pretend like I speak Vietnamese because I'm here all the time, that I've immersed myself in their language.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's
and so
good.
And it was so funny. And the women loved it. The women who were in the background, they were just like totally rooting me on. They were like, yeah, you said it right. You said it right. You you said it exactly the way we speak. And so it was really funny. But
so
yeah,
I'm like excited to hear that you guys did some improv.
We did.
Because there were like a couple little moments I was wondering, and I didn't know how true you had to be to the script. Was it something where you'd like do the script a few times and then maybe play with it or?
Always. Oh, always. Great. And especially, you know, in Legally Blonde 2, they just let us do whatever we wanted. It was like, it was a rager. It was a 2-month rager.
Wow.
But okay. Yeah,
that's
they just,
a story.
You know, they leave you alone. They leave you alone. They're like, okay, your character is established. This is what you can do. And if you're having fun, you know, usually a director will just leave you alone. If you're like in front of the camera and you start riffing, they're just like, all right, yeah, it's the band jamming. That's cool.
And was it mostly just you two or was Reese improvising? How about the other characters?
You know, Reese is you know, I always say when you feel like you're in trouble, improvise. I don't think Reese ever felt in trouble.
Okay.
She's just got, you know, amazing confidence. And for me, as like, you know, someone who's always, you know, the bread and butter on the side, you know, the best friend or this, that, and the other, I'm like, I'm going to improvise to feel a little taller.
I get the feeling that you two were like really cracking everyone up on set.
We had a good time.
Yeah.
You know, Jessica Caulfield and I come from, you know, we come from theater backgrounds. So we're hams and, you know, you give us an inch, we take a mile. So that was a lot of fun.
Was there ever talk of a spinoff?
Oh, absolutely.
I can imagine.
Oh, sure. We definitely wanted a Laverne Shirley type show.
Oh,
we were thinking about that. We really were. But then, you know, come pilot season, everyone gets busy and we start auditioning. And
right.
We book something else. And then, you know, you throw that on the back burner. But it's funny.
I'm fascinated that you put in that Vietnamese line because that also helps give your character quite a bit of three-dimensional depth that I wonder— Was that really there in the script or was it primarily due to stuff that you added?
It's usually not. I mean, you know, half of the time you're, you know, these characters to move the storyline along or to give some kind of information in order to move the film along. And you, if you realize that, then you're like, okay, how can I add a little nougat and caramel and chocolate to this role?
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah. And that's the fun part because if you are able to add those things and then they don't end up, you know, on the cutting room floor, then you're lucky. You're lucky.
Let's talk about the looks you guys have because they're very deliberate and also ever changing. How much say did you have on like hairstyle and wardrobe and stuff?
You know, hairstyle and wardrobe, I had really short hair and they added extensions on my hair. They didn't know what the hell to do with me. I didn't have long, flowing, luxurious hair. But by the end, they ended up throwing a wig on me to show that time had passed. You know,
when you got bangs or the courtroom scene?
The courtroom scene and all of that fun stuff. But it was, you know, you let the hair and makeup department do whatever they want to you. I mean, they have everything established by the time you get there. So you're basically like, you know, a big blank. And 2 hours later, you walk out of the hair and makeup trailer. You're someone else. It's wild. You know, but you let them, you know, dress you up however, you know, they feel is right. And you trust them. And, you know, you turn around, you look in the mirror, like, oh, my God, who's that? You did a great job. Okay, time to play.
Because when the movie came out, I think I was at the prime age of 15 years old. And I just found it so aspirational. And I loved the clothes. And I loved how all you guys looked. And now when I'm rewatching it, I'm like, oh, this is crazy. So I wonder, but at the time, I mean, for me, it was like the height of fashion.
Sure.
Is that when, so you guys felt silly or did you think like, ooh, we look good?
Well, I mean, we were 25 playing 18. So let's call a spade here. So we were 25 playing 18. And when you're like a 25-year-old, you know, working actor in LA, you think you're in your 50s.
Right.
And, you know, so we were all acting like we were, in fact, smoking, you know what I mean? It was, you know, we'd hang out at cigar bars. So, you know, we talked about mortgage. So it's funny when you get dressed up like this, you're like, oh, wow, how over the top. It's like a musical. I feel like a drag queen.
Right.
But it was all about, you know, it was supposed to be candy coated. It was supposed to be cotton candy, 2 hours of, you know, a caramel apple. And it was a carnival. To me, it was something very reminiscent of like Greece, what they did in Greece, where everything was so eye popping that, you know, even though it did take place place in the 50s, it felt like high fashion. And it felt like something that you did want to be a part of.
Or, I got the sense of that. It was all very recognizable, but slightly heightened just to kind of make that
absolutely.
Point.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Definitely a lot of sparkle, plenty sunshine.
Oh, I love it so much. It's so good.
For sure, for sure.
You guys seem like you're having a blast. I would assume it's the same on set. Would Reese Witherspoon kind of get involved with that, or was she all business, or how did that go? Were you and Jessica always joking around, or the three of you, or the whole gang?
Reese is one of the smartest people you'll ever meet. She's, I mean, she was a person who got, you know, she got accepted to Stanford, and she was there for 5 minutes. It was like, I'm bored, I'm leaving.
Wow.
So, you know, it wasn't for me. So she's one of those people who can kind of do whatever she wants, drives you crazy, and makes you feel really less than. But no, but she's really, you know, she was a family woman, and all of us were like single with, you know, we had a, you know, Jessica Caulfield had like a different boyfriend like every 2 weeks.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, and I had to pretend like he was like the guy. Uh-huh. Is this David? David, come here. Is David? We've heard all about you.
I'm sorry, you know? I'm Lance.
No, yeah, oh. Lance! Yes. Oh, you're Lance!
Who's David?
David is her cousin who was supposed to come today. You see how good I am? No, but no, we were having fun and single, and, you know, Reese was, you know, had a very traditional life. Mm. And she was married, and she had a baby, and you know, she was mature while we were, you know, just a couple of hoodlums.
That's interesting.
Just a couple of clowns. So she did take everything seriously. I mean, she had a lot of weight to carry for that movie, and then became overnight like this huge household name after that got released. So
It really was this film, right?
That, it was.
Did it?
And we really had no idea what was going to become of it. We didn't know it was going to be as successful as it was. You know, you just do it and you have fun and you hope everything you do is going to be the biggest thing ever since, you know, Gone with the Wind.
Right.
Since Titanic. And you never know. So when this was, you know, a huge success overnight, we were like, what? This is amazing.
That's so great.
We couldn't believe it. It was so cool. She's very dedicated and so good. It. Absolutely.
And she played that role. I mean, it could have been someone else in that role.
Alicia Silverstone. Everyone thought, what?
Oh, right. So this was after Clueless or before?
This was after.
After Clueless. Yes. Okay, yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Because she gave that character so much depth and played it so sincerely. And like, even last night, I was like listening to her line readings and being like, wow, I personally would have said that a different way and it wouldn't have been as good.
Right. And she has this sort of way about her, and even in person, she is like, what did Jennifer Aniston say about her? I was reading this quote that Jennifer Aniston said about working with Reese Witherspoon. She is baby's breath. She kind of floats. Mm. You know, so she does have this sort of like sparkly quality to her. You're like, oh, wow, okay, that's a star. That's a star.
According to the internet, to take this with a huge grain of salt, these are the people that were considered for the part of Elle Woods.
Ooh, wow.
Charlize Theron.
Whoa.
Gwyneth Paltrow. Alicia Silverstone. Katherine Heigl. Christina Applegate. Mila Jovovich. Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And apparently Chloe Sevigny turned down the role of Vivian.
Oh.
Now, who knows how real any of this is?
Wow. But, interesting.
Yeah.
I thought Selma Blair was just—
She's amazing.
Perfect.
Yeah.
She's so good.
Salt to her cinnamon.
I'll tell
right?
you what, yes. I like her fashion style. I'll say it.
Yeah, you would.
I know I would.
You like that kind
of— Yeah, you like them preppy bitches.
He likes those turtlenecks.
All righty. Go, honey. Yeah. JJ Bean or LL Bean all the way.
Yes, yes.
All right. So let's move on quickly to Legally Blonde 2. And you guys are parlaying the success of the first one. And you said yourself that it was just kind of a free-for-all in terms of character. And what was your perception of it and your experience on that?
Oh, my God. I thought, wow, we're getting paid again to act like jerks? I can't wait. I mean, you know, it was a year and a half later where we got the call saying that, yes, we want you aboard Legally Blonde 2. And, you know, I got a call from Jessica Caulfield. She's like, oh, my God, we're working again. This is so cool. We have a job. So we were just ecstatic. And you know, coming back on board, it's like a reunion. And Jennifer Coolidge, we really got to know because we weren't in any of her scenes in the first film. So I, you know, here I was a huge fan of hers after Best in Show came out.
Yeah.
And so Legally Blonde 2 came out and I thought, oh my God, I get to ride in a bus with Jennifer Coolidge, you know, at the Hamptons Film Festival. Oh my God. And so we got to hang out and have a few laughs. She's amazing.
Yeah, she's wonderful.
Yeah, she really
this
is.
Film especially, yeah.
Absolutely.
All right, we're going to do a new segment now that I'm very, very excited about. I've never done this on this show, and it's called Questions from Matt's Parents.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so because we watched this last night with my dad and my stepmom, and I'm going to read you their questions verbatim.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
I'm ready.
Oh, I can't wait. They were loving the movie, by the way. They've seen it before. They said it's one of their favorites.
Yeah. Okay, this is from my dad. Quote, why was Warner such a dork? Now, I said, do you have any questions for Alana?
And you know, I love that he called him a dork. He was supposed to be a dork. We all had to wonder why Reese Witherspoon Elle Woods was madly in love with this guy. And she was kind of chasing a dream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he was sort of, I mean, this dork is, you know, he was everything great on paper, but when it came down to it, he was like this big, adorable, beautiful blank.
I kind of wonder if my dad has that confused and he's talking about Elle's friend that's kind of the nerd.
No, he was talking about Warner.
But a dork.
Well, he is kind of a goober.
I guess, yeah. Oh, that's true.
He is a dork. I mean, I call him a dork.
He is a dork.
Okay.
Yes.
And dork is a great word that I don't use enough.
Yeah, it's time to bring it back.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
We're bringing
the 90s back.
My stepmom, Dana. Again, verbatim.
What's going on, Dana?
I wonder what the talk was about the whole bimbo thing and the law professor hitting on her.
Oh! What the talk was about the law?
I don't know.
I think she means like the talk on set.
Yeah, like how did everybody feel about that? Now I didn't ask for clarification because I just wanted us to kind of suss this out in the room. But
well, isn't that funny that she still had to face the fact that there was a little bit of discrimination, even in the world that she was becoming successful in. And that was, you know, it was apparently her fate to become this really great lawyer. But even in the world of law, there are some sleazebags and scumballs. But, you know, she's now hardened to it because she knows what it's like to face rejection. And she knows she's now a lot stronger in Act Three. So she's able to sort of hold her own and not put up with being, you know, dominated by such a male-centric world.
These are great specific questions to answers to amorphous questions that I'm giving you.
So. Hey, bring it on, baby. Bring it on.
All right. From my dad again.
Yeah.
Did you work in a Vietnamese nail salon?
Oh, my God. He's so cute. Yes, I did. No, I did not work in a Vietnamese nail salon, but I've been to many. And I thought, you know, for once, I'd like to know what the hell kind of crap they're talking about behind my back about my fungal toes.
Do you remember what? There was no translation on the screen when you spoke Vietnamese.
There was
there?
When she
oh.
did, yeah.
There oh, was. What was
there
it?
Was. Oh, gosh. I think I was talking to the woman.
About Reese.
Elle Woods that's and how right. worried I was about what was going on.
And that's
on with
actually
her.
What you were saying.
Yes.
Okay, well.
And then amazing. She turned around and said, if I can say this on it, she said, no shit.
Okay,
and that was her retort back to me.
Yes. We just recently learned about this thing because I didn't want to make some generalization that was necessarily a Vietnamese person in there because I don't speak that language. But we just watched The Birds with some friends.
Yes.
And then another friend sent this article about Tippi Hedren from The Birds helping Vietnamese refugees who were in the States learn a trade. And so she set them all up with cosmetology training and they gravitated towards manicures and pedicures. And then that blew up in their culture. And that's why so many people specifically in California, but then throughout the nation are Vietnamese in those salons.
Thank you, Tippi.
Yes. And this is a great article. You can look it up. I think it's NPR or BBC, actually BBC, maybe, or The Guardian. I don't know, but it's an amazing story.
No creo. Are you serious?
Serious.
Damn, that's amazing. That's amazing trivia.
All right, from my stepmom, Dana, did this help your career?
Dana, did it ever. Boy, What, did I feel like a peacock during pilot season?
Oh, I bet.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Did I book anything? Absolutely not. But it was a good ego boost. I mean, to be in something that is considered sort of a landmark in pop culture is really fun, and it's heady. I feel like Didi Khan.
Oh,
yeah, yeah. It's cool.
Do you get recognized?
You know, it's funny. It depends on where I'm at. If I'm like in a vinyl record store, I'll get recognized for waiting. You know what I mean? Because a stoner, stoners are working there, and they'll be like, I know you from waiting. or like if I'm at a Denny's or like a TGI Fridays, waiting. But for Legally Blonde, yes, it would be, you know, I'd probably be, I'm in a salon or, you know, in some kind of beauty supply store, and I will get recognized for that.
That's really great.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, one last one, and this is from my dad. Quote, what was your take on this whole thing?
My take on this whole thing is so sweet. My take on this whole thing is that when I didn't have a take on the entire thing until the night of the premiere, when I finally sat there and watched it with the entire audience of strangers responding to all of the one lines that we were hoping to get laughs. But when you hear that wave of laughter after you think, wow, that was just that one little improv or that one little choice.
Yeah.
That, you know, 3 seconds of saying something, you know, off kilter that everyone really responded to. That's an amazing experience, better than sex.
Oh, that's so great. I realized last night when watching it that I feel like I know every line to that movie.
Oh,
I feel like I have the movie memorized.
Wow. Oh my God. I love that you have Legally Blonde memorized. I have Grease 2 memorized.
Oh.
And Purple Rain.
Really?
Yes. I'm damn proud of it. I loved Grease 2 when I was a kid.
Was that because it ran on cable so much? Because that's when I saw it a million times.
You know, my mom and dad, I think they it was a Christmas gift. For my mom and dad, it was a VHS tape.
Oof, that's big time back then.
Yeah, we had a VHS player.
$100.
Oh, yeah.
Cool Rider. I want a cool Rider.
Yeah.
I think I may like that one better, too, because what's that song in the bomb shelter that I love, too? Or
Let's Do It For Our Country.
That's right.
The red, white, and the blue. Yeah.
Wait, you like it better than Grease
1? Well,
one?
I mean, in some ways. You know how nuts. I like some of the bad Bond movies over the good ones?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Not that that's a bad movie, but there's just, I don't know, it goes off the rails in a wonderful way. I had Jamie Donnelly on, who played Jan on Grease. Brusha, Brusha, Brusha.
It's called Dessert Wine.
Yes, yes.
Yes.
And Michael Tucci, who plays, was he Duty? I'm trying to remember.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Duty.
Yeah.
How do I look? Like a beautiful blonde pineapple. I remember. I mean, I have Grease 1 memorized too.
Yeah.
They call me Cha-Cha because I'm the best dancer at St. Bernadette's.
But the worst reputation.
Let's go, Sandy. Good times.
So do you ever hear any talk about Legally Blonde 3, getting the team back together?
You know, it's really funny. When I go in on interviews, I always hear about it. The girls from AfterBuzz.
Oh, yeah.
You guys, E! Entertainment, Access Hollywood.
Yeah.
So we hear that they're working on a Legally Blonde 3. I'm like, well, honey, until I get that call from Gersh, I don't know anything about it.
I know. We had a meeting with Marie and I, my writing partner, had a meeting with Reese's production company, and they seemed, you know, just kind of a general meeting, but they seemed like open to people's ideas about what would happen in a Legally Blonde 3, but it didn't seem like there's no script or anything.
Yeah, but you know, I think Legally Blonde 2 was sort of a wink to whatever was going on at the time. So whatever Legally Blonde 3 is going to be about, it's going to definitely, you know, reference a lot of things that are going
what
on.
What would you guys have it be? If you could choose, what would it be?
Well, at the end of Legally Blonde 2, they kind of insinuate she's going to run for president.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
She kind of like drives by the White House and
and winks.
Yeah.
Into the camera. She breaks the wall.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I feel like it would.
Speaking of breaking the wall. That could be interesting.
And the ceiling.
Ooh.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it would definitely be anti-Trump because I'm assuming that it would have to be. But, you know, half of the people that love the movie
I found
are probably
his policies
Trump supporters.
To be very friendly towards women, so I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
I was kind of thinking, like, maybe it's like a Marcia Clark situation where when you catch up with her, she's, like, been humiliated after some big losing some big trial, and now she has to, like, get her groove back.
But that's good because it's got passage of time, and she's starting at a lower place now, too. But she's got to get back up. That's
right.
Good.
Absolutely. Yeah. That would be fantastic.
Are you listening, Reese?
Yes. I mean, I'd love to have her in jail.
Oh, my God.
You know what I mean?
But it's Mexico. She's just out of the country.
Oh, that would be so. Oh, yeah. Actually, legally
there's a huge wall that's been built.
That's right.
Abroad. To take Reese, like, out of the country somewhere exotic would be so
fun.
But
is that the title? Legally Blonde, Broad.
I mean, it's going to be like The Hangover. They're like, let's go to Thailand. Yeah, let's just bring it to Thailand. Yeah.
I would watch it.
I would. I'd get my parents back.
Awesome.
All right. So did you go to the premiere?
Yes.
And what was that like?
The premiere was amazing. It was in Westwood. There was another premiere in the Hamptons. And that was a lot of fun. Wow. And it was very small. I sat next to Paris Hilton's mother. And it was
How is she these days?
She's a very beautiful woman.
I believe it.
Wow. Very easy on the eyes. Very well preserved. Mm. And she was sitting next to me and she was really cute. She said, oh, are you in this film, young lady? And I said, yes, I am. And she said, oh, my daughter's just going to love this movie. It's Paris Hilton is my daughter. It was just very sweet.
Oh,
and
gosh.
I said, oh, my gosh. She said it with such pride. Uh-huh. And I said, oh, wow, she's very cool. She was like, yes. She was like, I love her very much. And it was so cute.
Aww.
And she was there with her little popcorn and her red vines and a Coke ready to watch the movie. It was really cute.
I love that.
But yeah, she was probably in the Hamptons bored and like, I think I'd like to see a movie today. just so happened to be a premiere.
Well, I only go to premieres.
Go
so
to premiere.
What's premiering today?
Red's premiering tonight. Okay. But yeah, it was funny.
All right. I want to talk a little bit about some general stuff. I read online that you were born in Downey.
Born and raised in the Mexican Beverly Hills, man.
I was born and raised in Whittier.
What?
For neighbors.
What? You're lying.
What high school did you
mentiroso.
Go to?
Mentiroso.
No mentiroso.
My sister went to Downey High and then she got kicked out. So my mom and dad were like, you're not going to Downey High because you'll probably end up, taking half of the day off to go surfing as well.
Oh, is that why she got kicked out?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, there are worse
things. She was a surfer girl.
Yeah.
You know, she was like a Lord of Dogtown.
Yeah.
But she ended up going to Southwestern in Pasadena. And so when I was a kid.
Oh, that's where we live now.
Mm-hmm. No way.
Crazy.
San Marino.
Yeah. You live in, that's where the academy? Or
that's where my sister ended up going to high school. But my mom and dad were like, you're going to a private school. So it was between Marlboro or L'Elysée Francais. And I ended up going to the Lycée because they allowed me to work professionally as a kid actor.
Oh my God.
And go to school at the same time. So I was still going to like a college prep school while working at the same time. Because I told my mom and dad, I was like, I want to work. I really want to work as an actor. They were like, well, how do you expect to go to a public school and be able to keep up, academically and then work at the same time? It would be impossible.
Wow.
So if you go to a smaller school, it'd be cool. And they had a little print shop. They had a lithography shop in downtown. It wasn't little, but it was off of Venice and Hoover. So they would be able to drop me off at school before going to work every day.
So they worked in downtown and would drop you off?
Yeah.
Would they also take your sister to San Marino or did she drive herself?
By the time she was kicked out of school, she was driving. So
okay.
Yeah, she'd drive her little red Berlinetta to school. And
I know this is what the listeners want to know, but this is important stuff to me. I find
For
this
sure.
stuff fascinating.
For sure, it's great.
So you were living in Downey all through high school. We could have crossed paths and not even known it.
My God, it's amazing. I went to St. Mark's Episcopal, and a lot of my girlfriends went to Downey High and Warren, the rivals of Downey High. And my mom still lives in the same house where I was born and raised right around the corner from
Whittier.
The Carpenters.
And
No way.
Amanda grew up in Long Beach, and her parents still live in the house that she grew up in as well. So it's really like three cities in a row, Whittier, Downey, Long Beach.
Yes.
Yeah.
My first kiss lived in Whittier, Mark Casas.
Do you know him?
Yes.
Yeah, he was my first kiss.
I knew it! That whore.
Downey like brings us some pretty great people. I'm trying to remember who Phil and Dave Alvin from the Blasters come from Downey, and
yeah, some real, Karen and Richard Carpenter.
That's right.
Yeah, we lived around the corner from that. Metallica
from Downey.
I think one of the band members, if I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong. Wasn't Nixon from?
He's from, he was born in Yorba Linda, but then raised in Whittier. There's a bunch of Nixon stuff wherever you go in Whittier. His college was there, his house, the first theater he did one show, and it was the same theater I did my first play in.
It's
all tied together.
That's so cool, man. there are very few of us.
Yeah.
There are very few of us that can say, you know, I was born and raised in LA and born and raised in the outskirts of, there's so much history there, and a lot of people don't realize that, you know, it's not just Whittier and Downey. There's a lot of history.
Yeah.
Still has the oldest original McDonald's still standing.
That's right.
Really?
That's right. Yeah. And, I would go there.
It's really funky. There's still like rocks on a lot of like the roofs of the houses, the mid-century houses.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It looks like something out of the Flintstones.
It does.
Cool.
Don't you find too, because we talk about this, that especially in this industry and acting and writing and such, it's really rare to be a Southern Californian. Most people are transplants that moved here to do this career, but
absolutely. Yeah. Very, very rarely do you find a showgirl who was born and raised in Las Vegas.
Right.
I always wanted to do this since I was a baby. You know, No, really? Yeah. I mean, you usually end up in Vegas, but you're never born and raised there and then like start working there.
Yeah. You get vaccinated by the industry if you live nearby it and you don't need anymore. So I don't know what's wrong with us.
But
three,
surprisingly, but I find myself kind of gravitating toward people who are LA locals.
Me too.
Like a lot of my friends are.
Yeah.
It's wild.
And each other. Yeah.
And each other.
You probably do have some like tacit understanding that your life does not depend on the industry because you were raised before it. You existed before it.
Sure. And, I was raised before when that CVS was the Esprit store. West Hollywood. I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah. Sam Goody back when it was a licorice pizza.
Yeah, licorice pizza. Yeah. Oh, my God. I was telling that to my husband. And he was like, licorice pizza. I was like, you get it?
It's the best name for a store ever.
I do not understand.
An album back when there was just vinyl. The logo was a woman.
The original color of licorice is
steaming record album that looked like a pizza.
I thought it was a pizza parlor.
No.
Called Licorice Pizza.
It was
pizza.
What Sam Goody used to be called.
Yeah.
Or Sam Goody absorbed them or something.
Yeah, licorice pizza.
Yeah.
That is good.
And then there was a really great, Middle Earth Records in Downey that was a really, really cool, like they had really fun like punk rock.
Oh, like Levels in Uptown Whittier.
Yeah, from like Tokyo, man. Like you could get anything out there. I remember getting like a Sugar Cubes album of, when she was just like 14.
Jeez.
You know, so.
Well, we really tangented. I did this to us. I'll take the blame. So, Alana, what are you doing now? Anything you want to plug?
Oh, my gosh. Well, Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce is now in season 4.
Right. Okay.
And that's coming out every Thursdays on Bravo. So check that out. We finished our last season. We're going into season 5 soon.
Wow. Congrats.
Thanks.
That's awesome.
Thank you so much. And so that's going on. I'm pitching my own show, which is a lot of fun, with the writer of Meet the Fockers, Jim Hirschfeld.
Oh, which you were in as well.
Yeah. And so we have something really fun and outrageous that we're basically banging down doors and seeing what sticks. And I'm on a couple of cartoons, Welcome to the Wayne for Nickelodeon. I play a little boy who's lonely, who lives in a hotel, who talks like this. I was there too. Yeah, I play a lot of little boys in cartoons. And I just had a baby.
Congratulations.
Oh,
he's 4 weeks old.
Oh my God.
Thomas Rodolfo Russo III.
Oh. Wow.
And he's the apple of my eye. I'm so madly in love. He wakes up with this gigantic face in his, like, every morning. I think I probably scare him half to death, but he's just amazing, and it's really wild. He's my first baby, and I can't believe it. It's really unbelievable.
Well, like, I think it's fair to say things are going well for you. Congratulations.
Oh my gosh. Thank you. Natural childbirth was probably the scariest experience of my life. Oh my God.
And you did it all natural?
No, I did not. I'm not a martyr. Give me that epidural. But still, labor to me is like probably what enduring, like maybe a hand stabbing, you know, and then waiting for help to arrive. It's like, oh God, it's really painful. you know, this one area in your body, you're like, oh my God, this is, I can't believe women do this more than once.
I know. Yeah. I look forward to it when we, we have a child.
Get that epidural, honey. Yes. Don't be a martyr.
I think I will.
I might get one too.
Get yourself an epidural. Okay.
Well, you can't have mine.
Yes. And you here, you engineer, get an epidural.
Come on, Ryan, get an epidural.
Epidurals for everyone.
Amanda, anything you want to plug or?
No.
Oh, come on. I'll do it for you.
When does this come out?
I don't know.
Oh, well, check out.
It'll either be this next Wednesday or 2 weeks from then.
Oh, great. I mean, if you haven't, check out Complete Woman on Earwolf or Complete Joy on Howl.
That's right. Season one is free on iTunes or anywhere else.
Yes.
And season two is on Stitcher Premium and season three is coming.
Yes, that's true. The Complete Wedding is coming.
This is a 1960s vinyl recording type of a feminist from the 60s who's got it all wrong.
Oh, this sounds genius.
It's really fun. Yeah. Matt produces it and helps me a lot.
But put the pieces together. She's that does it all.
I have to find this. This is so cool.
I'll email it to you. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, and plug, if you haven't watched Hand of God, check out Hand of God. I'm in it with, it's a lot of fun with Ron Perlman. Really good on Amazon.
Okay. Well, meow. Alana, thank you so much for doing this with
us. Thank you for having me. This was amazing.
And thank you for letting me be here. It's one of my favorite movies, and this is really exciting.
As far as I'm concerned, I would have you on anytime. Both of you. You're both invited to be hosts whenever you want.
Awesome. Yeah. We'll see you tomorrow.
Okay. Perfect.
This has been an Earwolf production. Executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Chris Bannon, and Colin Anderson. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.